We are on page 439, paragraph 119. Even as far as the Brahma world, he wields bodily mastery. That means he goes to the world of the Brahmas. So having made even the Brahma world the limit, he wields bodily mastery. That means he wields self-mastery in the Brahma world by means of the body. And the meaning of this should be understood according to the text and the quotation from the Patisambhita Magga. So when he wants to go to the Brahma world, he resolves that Brahma world become near. So making the far near and sometimes making the near far. And though many he resolve upon few, let there be few, and then there are few. And though few he resolve upon many, let there be many, and there are many, and so on. With the divine eye he sees the fine material visible form of that Brahma. With the divine eye element, ear element, that means just with the divine ear, he hears the voice of that Brahma. With the knowledge of penetration of minds, that means reading other people's minds, he understands that Brahma's mind. And if this possessor of supernormal power, having reached mental mastery, wants to go to the Brahma world with a visible body, he converts his mind to accord with his body. That means he made his mind become something like his body. He resolved his mind to accord with his body. Having converted his mind to accord with his body, resolved his mind to accord with his body, he arrives at blissful perception or easy perception and light, quick perception. They will be explained later. And he goes to the Brahma world with a visible body. If this possessor of supernormal power, having reached mental mastery, wants to go to the Brahma world with an invisible body, he converts his body to accord with his mind. So he resolves that his body becomes similar to his mind. He resolves his body to accord with his mind. Having converted his body to accord with his mind, resolved his body to accord with his mind, he arrives at blissful perception and light, quick perception. And he goes on to the Brahma world with an invisible body. So in that case, he goes to the Brahma world invisible. He creates a fine material visible form before that Brahma. Mind made with all its limbs, lacking no faculty. That means he creates another body in his body. If that possessor of supernormal power walks up and down the creation means the image created. The creation walks up and down there too. If that possessor of supernormal power stands, sits, lies down, the creation lies down there too. If that possessor of supernormal power produces smoke, produces flames, preaches Dharma, asks a question, being asked a question, answers, the creation being asked a question, answers there too. If that possessor of supernormal power stands with that Brahma, converses, enters into communication with that Brahma, the creation stands with that Brahma there too, converses, enters into communication with that Brahma there too. Whatever that possessor of supernormal power does, the creation does the same thing. And this is for the disciples, not for the Buddha, because the Buddha can do anything.
Of these practices, how common are they in both usage and in accomplishment?
Nowadays, we do not hear anybody exercising these powers. So maybe in the olden days, during the time of the Buddha, and until the time of the writing of Visuddhimagga, they may have been in practice. But since it is difficult to get jhanas and this kind of supernormal knowledge, maybe they fell into neglect. So nowadays we do not find anybody experiencing or exercising these powers. But there are some stories where we can inferred that somebody had such powers. Now, one story was about a monk in Burma who was said to be very learned, but he did not practice meditation. He was just learned. And so his friend, a monk who practices meditation, came to him from time to time, and they have discussions about Dharma. So when they have discussions, the one who is versed in the book said, "Oh, it must be according to the books. The practice must be according to the books." But the other monk said, "The books cannot explain everything a person experiences during meditation. So sometimes it may not be according to the book, but they always end up with just unsettled dispute. But they are great friends." So one day, the other monk came to him, and they talked into the night. And about midnight, the other monk left. So when he left, the monk who was very learned went with him some distance. And at that time, the other monk said, "Venerable A, be mindful, do not be neglectful." And then it was reported that he rose up into the sky, into the air, and flew away. So next day, the other monk heard that that person had died. So when he saw this, he was very moved. And so he was talking to himself, I am nothing. Although I am a great learned man, and although I am a teacher of the king, I didn't have any attainment like the other monk. So he gave up teaching and learning, and then he practiced meditation. And he also was reported to have reached the third stage of enlightenment. And there were reports that once a monk went there and asked him to go to a place for lunch. And so he said, "You go ahead, I will follow you." But there was a river to be crossed. And when the other monk has crossed the river, he was on the other bank, ready to go with him. Something like that. That was about 150 years ago. But now we do not find anybody like that. One thing is, when some practice fell into disuse, then there is no way to learn them from a teacher who had that very experience and who could teach him personally. Mm-hmm. So that may be the trouble with this. So here, though far he resolves upon nearness, having emerged from the basic jhana, now he has to enter into the jhana, the fourth jhana. He adverts to a far-off divine world or to the Brahma world thus, let it be near. So he makes a resolution in his mind, let it be near. Having adverted and done the preliminary work, he attains again. That means he enters into jhana again and then resolves with knowledge, let it be near. So it becomes near. The same method of explanation applies to other classes too. So in order to practice the direct knowledge, one must have jhanas, so all four jhanas. So he enters into the fourth jhana, and then after emerging from it, he did the preliminary work, and then he enters again into the jhana, and then he resolves. That means he reaches the direct knowledge. Herein, who has taken what was far and made it near? The Blessed One. For when the Blessed One was going to the divine world after twin miracle, he made Yugandhara and Sinheru near, and from the earth's surface he set one foot on Yugandhara, and then he set the other on the summit of Sinheru. Sinheru is a mountain at the center of the universe, at the center of the earth, on which are situated and divine worlds or celestial worlds.
Is it Sumeru?
The same. Meru, Sumeru and Sinheru are the same. So different names. but one and the same thing. So when Buddha wanted to go to the celestial world to preach Abhidhamma, and he just made two steps. Three footprints and two steps. Mm-hmm. So one on the human world, and then one on the Yugandhara. The Yugandhara is about halfway between Sineru and human world. And then another foot, he put another foot on the top of Sineru. It may be something like in Hindu mythology, they call three Vikrama. Vishnu made three steps to cover all the world, something like that. So here, when Buddha wanted to put his foot on the Yugandhara, he resolved, let it be near. So maybe Yugandhara came close, near to him, and then he stepped on it. Who else has done it? The elder Mahamoggallana. For when the elder was leaving Sarvati after completing his meal, he abridged the 12-league crowd and the 13-league road to the city of Sankasa, and he arrived at the same moment. And there is some error in the translation. After completing meal is it does not refer to Moggallana, but to the crowd, and that crowd was 20 league big, say about 20 miles. I mean 12 league big, so about 12 mile big, and they took morning meal in the city of Sankasa, in the city of Sarvati. And then Moggallana told them, don't think about, because they were going to Sankasa, where Buddha was to descend from the celestial world at the end of Abhidhamma preaching. So he told them, don't think about the distance. Just have wish that to reach there. And then Moggallana made that city of Sankasa 30 leagues away, came near. So in paragraph 76, oh, please go back to the 76, we find something of that. About the middle of the paragraph, the elder Mahamoggallana performed here. Having arrived thus, he related what had happened. That is, he came back from the celestial world, meeting the Buddha. Then he said, come forth after the morning meal, and pay no heed to distance, thus promising that they would be able to see in spite of the distance. So this great multitude of people naturally cannot reach the city of Sankasa in one day, but he made them reach there. So here, and arrive at the same time, not arrive at the same time, but it means reach the city of Sankasa instantly, not at the same time. They just have the wish to reach there, and then Moggallana took them there with his power. So, instantly. And then furthermore, the elder Chula Samuda did it as well in Tambapani Island, that is in Ceylon, Sri Lanka. Now, down the page, about 4 lines above, where is the ocean, Mahasamuda, Venerable Sir? Friends, did you not cross the blue stream on the way as you came? Now, the word blue there, the Pali word is nila. So here, I think blue is good. Because if you look at the ocean from above, from the air, here nowadays from the airplane, it looks blue. So here, the ocean between India and Sri Lanka looks like a small stream because they were up in the air. So he took them there for alms round. And then next page, Elder Tisadatta did likewise when he had put on his upper robes after bathing in the evening, and the thought of paying homage to the great enlightenment tree arose in him. That means he seemed to be in Sri Lanka, but he wanted to pay homage to the great enlightenment tree, the Mahabodhi in India. Who has taken what was near and made it far? The Blessed One. For although Angulimala was near to the Blessed One, yet he made him far distant. Angulimala was following the Buddha. Actually, he was not far from the Buddha, but Buddha performed a miracle by which Angulimala thought Buddha could not be reached. He was running after the Buddha, and he got tired, and so he said, oh monk, stop. Then the Buddha said, I am standing, and you are not standing, something like that. So Buddha made the distance appear great between him and Angulimala. So you may read that story in Middle Length Sayings or Majjhima Nikaya, Sutta number 86, about Angulimala. Who has made much little? The elder Mahakasapa. One feast day at Rajaga, it seems, there were 500 girls on their way to enjoy the festival, and they had taken mooncakes with them. They saw the Blessed One, but gave him nothing. On their way back, however, they saw the elder. Not on their way back, here also. So we should strike out these words, on their way back. And instead of them, we would say, when. When, however, they saw the elder coming after. First, they saw the Buddha. And they didn't give anything to the Buddha, because they were the disciples of the elder Mahakasapa. So they have something like attachment. We will give only to our teacher and not to the Buddha. So they didn't give Buddha anything. So when they saw the Mahakasapa coming after, so we should say, when, however, they saw the elder coming after, comma, and thinking with small t, thinking he is our elder, they each took a cake and approached the elder. The elder took out his bowl and made a single bowlful of them all. So, though there are many, and the elder made them small, just single bowlful. The Blessed One had sat down first to wait the elder. The elder brought them and gave them to the Blessed One. So here, the elder Mahakasapa made many cakes, small or little. In the story of the rich man Elisa, however, the elder Mahamoggallana made little much. And you may read this on Jataka number 78 of Buddhist Legends, part 2, page 49. The DHA 1372, that is the Pali book. So the translation is called Buddhist Legends. So it's part 2, page 49. The elder Mahamoggallana made little much. And in the story, this man was very, very stingy man. He didn't want to give anything to anybody. And one day he wanted to eat some food, some cake. So he went up to his mansion, seven stories high, and on the uppermost story, he cooked the food, so that nobody sees him, and so nobody, he didn't have to give to anybody. But the elder Moggallana knew this, so he went there with his power, and then stood there for alms. And then he said he wouldn't give him, but late, in the end he had to give, because the monk was persistent. And then Moggallana resolved in his mind that there were not one cake, but there were many cakes. So however much he gave, there was no end of them. And in the story of Kakavaliya, the Blessed One did so. He was a poor man. Elder Mahakasapa, it seems, after spending 7 days in attainment, that means 7 days phala attainment, stood at the house door of a man in poor circumstances called Kakavaliya in order to show favor to the poor. It is said that if you give something to a monk, a person who has just emerged from the attainment, then that brings great results. So Mahakasapa always did that. Before going to a house, he would practice meditation and enter into attainment. And then after emerging from attainment, he just went to the house, direct to the house. And then those people gave something to him. So he went now to Kakavaliya in order to show favor to the poor. His wife saw the elder and he poured into his bowl the unsalted sewer gruel that she had cooked for her husband. They didn't even have salt. The elder took it and placed it in the Blessed One's hand. The Blessed One resolved to make it enough for the great community of monks. It's like Christ feeding 500 people. What was brought in a single bowl became enough for all. And on the seventh day, Kakavaliya became a rich man. And not only in the case of making little much, but whatever the possessor of supernormal power wishes, whether to make the sweet unsweet or the unsweet sweet, etc., is successful for him. So he can do anything. For so it was that when the elder Maha Anula saw many bhikkhus sitting on the banks of the Ganga River, and this is not in India, it is in Ceylon. In the commentaries, that river is just referred to as Ganga. So sometimes it would confuse with the river Ganges in India. Actually, the name of that river is it is now called Mahaweli Ganga. Mahaweli means with much sand. So, eating plain rice, which was all that they had got after doing their alms round. So no curry, nothing, just a plain rice. So he resolved, let Ganga River water be cream of ghee. And he gave a sign to the novices. They fetched it in their vessels and gave it to the community of monks. All of them ate their meal with sweet cream of ghee. So this is resolving what is far to be near, what is near to be far, and so on. Now, with the divine eye, remaining here and extending light, he sees the visible form of that Brahma, and remaining here, he also hears the sound of his speech, and he understands his mind. He converts his mind according to his body. He converts the mind to accord with the material body. Taking the consciousness of the basic jhana, he mounts it upon the body. He makes its going slow to coincide with that of the body. For the body's mode of going is slow. But it does not mean that the mind becomes slow in arising and disappearing. Because that is the nature of the mind or the chitta, that it has just three sub-moments. But matter or the body lasts for how many moments? 17 moments or 51 sub-moments. So this is the nature, and even the miraculous power cannot change the nature. But here he just made the consciousness follow the body or coincide with that of the body, for the body's mode of going is slow. He arrives at blissful perception and light perception. He arrives at, enters, makes contact with, reaches the perception of bliss and the perception of lightness that are connascent with the consciousness whose object is the basic jhana. So basic jhana takes that consciousness as the object. And it is perception associated with equanimity that is called perception of bliss. Now, The word, the Pali word here is sukha. It's very strange. Here sukha means upekha. So it is sukha sanya, and sukha sanya actually means sanya or say chaita associated with equanimity, upekha. For equanimity is called bliss since it is peaceful. So since it is peaceful, it is called bliss here, sukha. But we are not to take it to mean pleasant feeling. It is equanimity. And that same perception should be understood to be called perception of lightness. Lightness too, because it is liberated from hindrances and from the things that oppose it, beginning with applied thought. So it is called perception of lightness because it is liberated from hindrances and liberated from the things that oppose it, beginning with applied thought and so on. But when he arrives in that state, his physical body too becomes as light as a tuft of cotton. He goes to the Brahma world thus with the visible body as light as a tuft of cotton wafted by the wind. As he goes thus, if he wishes, he creates a path in space by means of the earth gasena and goes on foot. If he wishes, he resolves by means of the air gasena that there shall be air, and he goes by air like a tuft of cotton. Moreover, the desire to go is the measure here. So in whatever way he wants to go, he goes there. When there is the desire to go, one who has made his mental resolve in this way goes visibly, carried by the force of the resolution, like an arrow shot by an archer. He converts his body to accord with his mind. He takes the body and mounts it on the mind, so that the body becomes swift. He makes its going swift to coincide with that of the mind, for the mind's mode of going is swift. He arrives at blissful perception and light perception. He arrives at perception of bliss and perception of lightness that are cognizant with the supernormal power consciousness, whose object is the material body. Here, the object is material body. There, the object is consciousness. The rest should be understood in the way already described, but there is only the going of consciousness. And then, footnote. Actually, as I said, nobody can change the nature, the individual essence of things, even by miraculous power. But the mind is made to follow the body, or the body is made to accord with mind. And that means they do not discard their individual essence, but they just follow mind follows the going of body, and body follows the going of mind. Now, page 443. When it was asked, as he goes with an indivisible body thus, does he go at the moment of the resolution consciousness arising, or at the moment of its presence, or at the moment of its dissolution? Now we are going very, 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 very specific. One thought moment has three sub-moments, the arising, here presence, and dissolution. So at which sub-moment he goes with the indivisible body? Then the answer is, an elder replied. Here, an elder means someone among the writers of the commentaries. So, one elder or one teacher replied, he goes in all three moments. But does he go himself, or does he send a creation? Again, he does as he pleases. But here it is only the going himself that has been given in the text. So in the text, the going himself is given. But in practice, and he can go in all three moments, and he can go himself, or he can just send his creation, his likeness or his image. Now, mind-made, This is the word to be commented upon. Man-made because created by the mind in resolution, lacking no faculty. This refers to the shape of the eye, ear, etc. Now, the word faculty strictly means eye sensitivity, ear sensitivity, and so on. So the Pali word used is indriya. But here, indriya or faculty does not mean just the sensitivity of eye, ear, and so on, but the shape of the eye, ear, etc. But there is no sensitivity in the created visible form. So if a person who possesses the supernormal power creates an image of himself, there is no sensitivity in the created image. So there may be the eye, the ear, but no eye sensitivity, ear sensitivity, because they are caused by karma only. And what is the footnote? This should be regarded as implying that there is no sex or life faculty in it either. If the possessor of supernormal power walks up and down, the creation walks up and down there too, etc., all refers to what the disciple creates. But what the Blessed One creates does whatever the Blessed One does, and it also does other things according to the Blessed One's, I would like to say, wish, not pleasure.
Does the Blessed One is beyond pleasure?
Yes. The Pali word used is ruchi. Ruchi can mean wish or pleasure or desire. When this possessor of supernormal power, while remaining here, sees a visible object with the divine eye, hears a sound with the divine ear element, just divine ear, knows consciousness with the penetration of mind, he does not wield bodily power in doing that. So, in the passage quoted, it is said that he wields bodily power. And as far as the Brahma, he wields bodily mastery. So, he's commenting upon that. So he, while remaining here, sees a visible object and so on. He does not wield bodily power in doing that. And while remaining here, he stands with that Brahma, converses, enters into communication with that Brahma. He does not wield bodily power in doing that. And when he makes his resolve, described in the way beginning, dofa, he resolves upon nearness, he does not wield bodily power in doing that. And when he goes to the Brahma world with a visible or an invisible body, he does not wield bodily power in doing that. But when he enters upon the process described in the way beginning, he creates a visible form before that Brahma, mind-made, then he wields bodily power in doing that. Only then is he said to be wielding bodily power, when he creates another image of himself, another image in himself, within himself. The rest, however, is said here for the purpose of showing the stage prior to the wielding of the bodily power. This firstly is success by resolve. This is on paragraph 45. The difference between success as transformation and success as the mind-made is as follows. Now, success as transformation. One, firstly, who performs a transformation should resolve upon whatever he chooses from among the things, beginning with the appearance of a boy, described as follows. He abandons his normal appearance and shows the appearance of a boy, or the appearance of a naga serpent, or the appearance of a supana, winged demon. Supana means Garuda. You know Garuda. It's a mythical bird. Maybe it's a kite. Because he is the enemy of the naga serpents. Or the appearance of an asura, a demon. Or the appearance of the ruler of gods, Indra. Or the appearance of some other sensual sphere deity. Or the appearance of a Brahma. Or the appearance of the sea. Or of a rock. Or of a lion. Of a tiger. Of a leopard. Of an elephant, or a horse. Or he shows as a chariot, he shows a foot soldier, he shows a manifold military array. So that is transforming himself. And when you resolve, he should emerge from the fourth jhana. That is the basis for direct knowledge, and has one of the things beginning with the adkasina as its object, and he should advert to his own appearance as a boy. After adverting and finishing the preliminary work, he should attain again. He should go into jhana again and emerge, and he should resolve thus, let me be a boy of such and such a type. Simultaneously with the resolve consciousness, that means direct knowledge consciousness, he becomes the boy, just as Devadatta did. Now, Vinaya Pitaka and Dhammapada Arthakatha. Now, if you want to read in Vinaya Pitaka, please read Book of Discipline, Volume 5, page 259. And if you want to read Dhammapada Commentary, then Buddhist Legends, Part 1, page 234. Now, Devadatta was Buddha's cousin. And he practiced meditation and he got jhanas and direct knowledge, but he didn't become enlightened. But he was very ambitious. He wanted to become a Buddha himself. So when Buddha became old, he asked Buddha to retire. And so he would take his place. Buddha said, no. You do not deserve to be a Buddha. Now, he tried to plot against the Buddha, to attempt murdering the Buddha, because in the olden days, if you kill a king, you become a king. If you can kill a king, then you become a king. So he wanted to kill the Buddha and become the Buddha himself. But without the help of a king or what, someone in position, he couldn't do that. So he tried to convince the young son of a king, of the king then, King Bimbisara. His son was Ajatasattu. So he transformed himself into a youth with snakes all around his body, and he showed himself to the young prince. So when the prince saw him, the prince was afraid. And then he resumed his form of monk again and said, don't be afraid. Then he was able to convince Ajatasattu. And then Ajatasattu became his disciple. So after some time, he told Ajatasattu, hey, people don't live long nowadays. So if you wait until your father dies, then you will be very old. So kill your father and become a king. And I will kill my brother, the Buddha, and I will become a Buddha. So they tried to kill, Ajatasattu tried to kill and succeeded in killing his father. But Devadatta did not succeed. So this story can be read in the Vinaya or in the Dhammapada commentary. This is the method in all instances. But he shows an elephant, etc., is said here with respect to showing an elephant, etc., externally. Here, instead of resolving, let me be an elephant, he resolved, let there be an elephant. The same method applies in the case of the horse and the rest. So this is transformation. Now, next one is success as the mind made. One who wants to make the mind-made body should emerge from the basic jhana and first advert to the body in the way already described, and then he should resolve, let it be hollow. So he creates a hollow in himself, a space in himself. It becomes hollow. Then he adverts to another body inside it. That means let there be another body. And having done the preliminary work in the way already described, he's resolved, let there be another body inside it. Then he draws it out like a reed from its sheath, like a sword from its scabbard, like a snake from its slough. Hence it is said, here a bhikkhu creates and so on. This is from the Patisambhita Magga. So he creates a body in himself, and then take that body out. And there, just as the reed, etc., is similar to the sheath, etc., so too the mind-made visible form is similar to the possessor of supernormal power. And this simile is given in order to show that. So this is the difference between transforming oneself into different persons or different things, and here creating oneself inside oneself and then taking that out. Actually, we have not finished with direct knowledge yet, so we go to the next chapter.
Why did they stop there? Right? Because the chapter was getting
too
long.
That's right. I was thinking of that too. Maybe he wanted to comment in detail about how to practice, what to do in order to get the direct knowledge. So this chapter, chapter 13, is the chapter on direct knowledge. Divine ear element. Divine ear element simply means divine ear. So it is now the time for the description of the divine ear element. And then the translator gave the text here. It is good, because if we do not see the text, then we would not be able to understand the explanations given below. So the text is, he inclines his mind to the divine ear element. With the divine ear element, which is purified and surpasses the human, he hears both kinds of sounds, the divine and the human, those that are far as well as near. Herein, with the divine ear element. Now, it is divine here because of its similarity to the divine. For deities have the divine ear element, the sensitivity that is produced by karma consisting in good conduct and is unimpeded by bile, phlegm, blood, etc., and capable of receiving an object even though far off because it is liberated from imperfections. Now, deities have their ears too, and their ears are, sensitivity in their ears are so free from imperfections, free from impediments, that they could hear sounds far away. And see, they do not have the impediments like bile, phlegm, blood, and so on. So their ears are much more sensitive than human ears. And this ear element consisting in knowledge, which is produced by the power of this bhikkhu's energy in development, is similar to that. So it is divine because it is similar to the divine. Here, the commentary is explaining the word, the divine, Pali word deva. The Pali word is deva soda. Deva soda literally means divine ear. But here, what is really meant is not the divine ear, but the knowledge, which is similar to divine ear. So that is why it is said, because of its similarity to the divine. Furthermore, that is another explanation. It is divine because it is obtained by means of divine abiding and because it has divine abiding as its support. Now here, divine means jhanas. Divine abiding means jhanas.
Is it Brahma Vihara?
No. It's very important here. Although Brahma Vihara is translated as divine abiding, even in this book, but here, divine abiding does not mean Brahma Viharas. It means just jhanas, the four jhanas. And because it is divine abiding at its support. So If you do not get have four jhanas, then you cannot get this direct knowledge. Now, in our Pali books, there are three kinds of abidings. The Pali words are Dibba Vihara, D-I-B-B-A, and then Brahma Vihara. And the last one is Ariya Vihara. So there are three kinds of abidings. Dibba Vihara, Brahma Vihara, Ariya Vihara. Dibba Vihara means jhanas. Brahma Vihara means loving kindness, compassion, and so on. They are called Brahma Viharas. Ariya Vihara means a fruit attainment. Because after becoming an Ariya, a person enters into that attainment again and again, say, to enjoy it. So here, divine abiding means jhanas and not the full divine abodes or whatever. And it is an ear element in the sense of hearing and in the sense of being a soulless. That means the word element or dhatu is defined as something which is without a soul, which is soulless. So, sota dhatu, the commentator is explaining.